Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it's now or never. And as you know, as I tell you, other than it's now or, in other words, we're running out of time, it's now or never, folks. That debt clock, I have to emphasize this because bottom line, I think this is what gets through most Americans' heads. If you're tired of taxes, if you're tired of the sham of government spending money on anything that they feel, I mean, unlimited. They have this unlimited desire of controlling everything. And the way they do that is they spend money and they take on debt to spend money on things that they have no enumerated power to do. Which means that the debt that they have been creating for over a century, and by the way, folks, they've kept the records. In other words, you do have the opportunity. It's not that this is not my drive, but I believe that there will be people that will come forward that will have the desire to, you know, obtain justice, to restore things. Because that's maybe what the League of Lawyers, who may not have much else to do if we actually dismantle our current judiciary form of government and go back to common law, I think that these guys will find their place in being able to restore much of the wealth and those things that were taken from us. But what I'm trying to tell you is that debt is fraud. We do not owe a penny of that debt because all of the dollars that they took was being spent on things they had no authority to do. Biden has been doing this. Even Trump did it. And every president along. And so here's the problem. You know, I'm not bashing Trump. Trump didn't know. And as a matter of fact, he was encouraged by his cabinet. This only speaks to the fact that because of one's ignorance, they surround themselves with maniacal people that actually want to do bad things or continue to do the bad things. I believe that I postulated before that I don't think Trump really wanted to do these things. He was being advised to. And that's why he used executive orders instead of using his constitutional powers. Now, go back and listen, because I did it earlier this year, what a constitutional president can do. If Trump became a constitutional president, America would be on a quick path of being able to fix itself. But I'm not going to repeat that. As a matter of fact, I'm not here to entertain you. What I'm here to do is to help educate you, to get you, the reasonable people of America, equally informed, so we stop disagreeing and fighting and bickering over stupid crap. And I hate to put religion into that, because religion is one of those things that we constantly divide ourselves over. And so I'm going to have to dive into this. But as you know, this is Feedback Friday, and there's a few things I need to get into. So let me just talk really quick about what I need to get into content-wise. So I am planning on this Monday to start to dive into and augment the ratification debates with additional content so I can place on the public record. When I say on the public record, so I can put it into these podcasts so that you can always go back and get these things as long as I am allowed to be present on the internet. Now, Google has taken full control, and the Borg, the globalists are controlling our internet, whether you like it or not, and the federal government is just a pawn in this play. But as long as this content is up there, you're more than welcome to download so that you can have what you may think is critical, the content and documentation that you may find. We put the documentation up there for you too. In other words, we're kind of a repository, maybe a library for you, so that you can actually print these things out and actually prove to people that the Constitution was defined this very specific way. Don't use the Federalist Papers. I don't hate them, but they have no legal standing. They were just editorials that were posted in newspapers. They were not under testimony. Nobody was under the oath when they were writing. This was just an open form of agreements and disagreements. And I'm at awe to think that lawyers had bought into the fact that those are the real golden guides of our Constitution instead of our ratification debates, where the Federalists and Anti-Federalists rolled up their sleeves and they duked it out. And the states made their determination on what the Federalists said, not what the Federalist Papers said. The Constitution was not, and I emphasize enough, was not ratified by those Federalist Papers. The Pennsylvania ratification was actually done and said based on Wilson and McKean, I think it was McKean, in Pennsylvania. These were the Federalists that basically helped everybody understand what that Constitution meant. Not one Federalist paper was written at that point in time. And as a matter of fact, when many of the Federalist Papers were being written, they still hadn't been promulgated fully out to all of the states, like Massachusetts. As a matter of fact, when you look at Massachusetts ratifying, they didn't even pay attention to the Federalist Papers because they were ratifying in January. And as a matter of fact, when you look at what they did, they actually set the golden standard. In ratifying, they made and suggested amendments to the Constitution to basically give them a greater security in ensuring that the federal government would be contained in very specific ways. That's what the Bill of Rights is all about. Anyway, so let me just kind of dive into, you know, a little bit of feedback, because I got feedback on, you know, my position over, because there is a huge hatred towards Jews. And I think that is because there's an elite group of Jews that are very evil. There's an elite group of any and every demographic out there that are, you know, killing their own and doing all sorts of just evil things. And so last year in the ratification debates, which played yesterday, one of the shows yesterday, I kind of talked about Israel. And I've said this over time about Israel. And I've said this over time about other states. Any state in the world can become a state in the United States. Now, Israel is a theocracy. And even though I believe and I understand it can be a theocracy in the United States, I do believe that if they're practicing and they're doing things that are, you know, deceptive and so forth, there's no place for corruption. And as of this, you know, this launch of a war, I believe that because the Bible kind of talks about why and how Israel becomes this hated institution, this hated state. And, you know, the question is, why is that? And I truly believe that there is a reason, because I think that there is a crowd within the Jews, which is at, and there's a, they have a Bible that, or a, I should say a book. And if somebody could write it down for me, and I still wouldn't remember it because I just don't remember those types of things, but it's like a Bible. It is a guide, or like the Quran. It's a guide of a philosophy that is very evil, and it shows them how to rule people. And they've been using this for a long time. And this is really a part of a huge conspiracy. Just like the Illuminati, the Charter for the Illuminati, who was actually written by a Jew. Adam Weishaupt was an informed and enlightened Jew, and he's probably had something to do with that book. That book has been around thousands and thousands of years. And to be honest, I don't think the origins came from Israel. The origins of that book came from Satan. And Satan used that book to basically infiltrate Israel. Evil has been constantly infiltrating every state, every government since the beginning of man. As a matter of fact, Adam and Eve, who started building humanity here on this earth, had their institutions by their children invaded and or infiltrated by evil. We will constantly see this until the end. I don't want to get into the scriptures, but bottom line, folks, Israel can become a state in this union, but they would have to actually clean up their act. I mean, there you can create a theocracy, but you cannot create a theocracy that subjugates people to your doctrine. In other words, the association of a theocracy is strictly for compassionate services. When we look at the American theocracies of every state in the Union under the Constitution, the church only had a minor role, and their job was to do what they do best, providing compassionate services, not to preach and not to, you know, infiltrate and control, obtain control over government. There needed to be, and this speaks to the concept and paradigm of a separation of church and state at the federal level. And at a level at the state, there needs to be, we need to be cognizant. And this is why you hear me say this. When the states started finally migrating away from a monopoly of a religion and faith as integrated a part or doing the compassionate services for their state, instead of actually having a single doctrine or single theocracy, they should have created a free market. In other words, being able to allow and actually support and supplement any religion that was doing good, that was fully supported by their parishioners and so forth. And to dive into this, it's one of those things that is just so complex that it's something I just can't gloss over with a script. It's something that I really need to commit down to writing with methodical thinking so that I can actually fill all the holes, loops, and gaps. But I am telling you that society is far better off when the righteous leadership in our society is tending to and nurturing the individuals to become self-sufficient. A true enlightened society is when all people are contributing in the best ways they possibly can to taking care of themselves and uplifting society. That is not what Satan is out to do. That is not what these evil Islamists, Jews, Christians, everybody has their share. Now, I'm always told, you know, because I don't know what the truth is. Are the Jews really behind everything? No, I believe Satan is. And I do believe this, that any evil, true, corrupt organization is very compartmentalized, and they do this because this is what happens in terrorist organizations. This is what happens with intelligence operations, is one, they have this concept of plausible deniability regarding leadership, and that's the ability of people, typically senior officials in former or informal chains of command, to be able to deny knowledge or responsibility for actions committed by or on behalf of members of their organization and hierarchy. So that's plausible deniability, and that became a part of American policy under John F. Kennedy. Or at least that's when it started actually being exposed, this plausible deniability. But they also have this compartmentalization, even at the upper levels, so that there's certain things that are happening that nobody knows everything. They only know what's really happening within their channel. They have no idea what this other channel is doing and why they're doing this, and they have no idea how things come together. It's usually after the fact that we start seeing how things actually start integrating like gears meshing, and you can start to see the engine turning and operating. This grand conspiracy and the designer of this is the epitome of evil. That's all I can say. So regardless of what I say, and I'm just trying to gracefully help people understand, whatever I say regarding religion and these general forms of these different theocracies, government, and so forth, when it comes to American history and when it comes to our Constitution and what our Constitution ultimately did in the channels of what was operating at that point in time, I stand by what I say. And so if I go down a rat hole and I'm only talking in a brief context of something, before you pull out the pitchforks and the torches and start marching, give it a second and really think, am I actually speaking on a profound level of the details you need to know, or am I just glossing over? Because bottom line, my opinion and my knowledge on the Constitution is one that identifies what the real truth is. God had a plan and an opportunity of liberty, an opportunity where the earth would have a chance. And this nation that was created was the nation that was going to give the world a chance to break the shackles of the controls of Satan and the evil designs of these monarchical communisms, monarchical theocracies, and all of these things, where people were no longer controlled, where people would have the opportunity to receive a plethora of doctrines so that they could choose for themselves. 1, 2, 3 competing doctrines, whatever. In other words, the United States wasn't created just to create a free market for the economy. It was to create a free market of ideas like religion, where people would actually be able to be free to hear the message and to respond to the message and even worship based on the message. I hope this is making sense. And this is one of the reasons why I am compelled, before I can dive into the First Amendment, I feel this, you know, this heavy compulsion. Because yesterday I was interviewed by Angeline again. I think it's Plesk. Anyway, the whole point of that interview was over this movement where people are talking about scuttling this Constitution and designing and creating a theocracy to follow their Bible. Now, there's lots of people out there. And as a matter of fact, just imagine all of the different good Christians of all the different faiths, whether that be the good Catholics, because, I mean, there are people that are really pure in heart that are following and truly believe that they're being saved by these different doctrines. This is kind of why what Martin Luther did to the Germanic states was huge. This was instrumental. He took a nation who, for centuries, believed that their salvation was coming through the way they were worshiping. They were going to have eternal life because they were following the Catholic Church. So when Martin Luther identified that there were problems with the Catholic Church, and these were some significant problems he pointed out, nobody knew this. Martin Luther knew it, and he exposed it. And he basically called upon the church to actually do something. Now, history repeats itself. We're already pointing out how the federal government shouldn't be doing things. As a matter of fact, they've been making it up as they go along so they can continue getting away with murder. And so they use an annotated constitution in making up their rules and so forth. So when we look at the grand scheme of things, what Martin Luther did was not to actually reform Christianity. He was trying to get what they thought was the pure church in line with the scriptures. But instead, that evil church, or the leaders of that church and their evil intent, they decided to ignore him because they weren't willing to give up these mechanisms they were using to get rich and so forth. And as a matter of fact, I hear, oh, well, by that time the Jews had already controlled them and took over. Anyway, because there's always this, you know, oh, well, the Jews are involved. Anyway, I can't wash myself from that type of thing. People just keep on making all these connections. And so the Jews were not involved in what Martin Luther was doing. But, you know, evil, and it's evil. It's not a particular race. It's actually not a particular genealogical sphere. Evil is permeated into every level. every level of your demographic, race, culture, gender, everything. So anyway, what Martin Luther did was he opened the door based on King John and the Magna Carta, the concept of standing up and petitioning for the redress of grievances, actually started growing in enlightenment. Martin Luther was the next level of basically petitioning government, or at that, because the Catholic Church was the governing body of the Roman Catholic Empire because they controlled all the monarchies. And so when we look at what Martin Luther did, he did this underneath this big, huge Catholic, Roman Catholic Church empire. And at that point in time, even Britain was still being controlled. I've covered this in history for you. I go over this all the time. Every government of Europe had its own little fashions and factions of the Catholic Church. And none of them broke away until the Germanic states broke away. And then they created this Protestant faith. And this was the beginning of the dividing of the, you know, the doctrines and focusing on what they wanted, because the next state, the next nation of Europe that actually broke away from the Catholic Church was Great Britain. And it was not of a righteous reason, but it was for the lusts and desires of a king to have a divorce. Didn't want to live under that rule that he couldn't get married again and divorce himself from a woman he didn't want to have. And so King George basically said, well, we're breaking away. And that took a while to do. It took Martin Luther 10 years in a movement to do. And I think I've never actually captured the actual time, but I believe it was something like 70 to 90 years before Britain had fully removed itself from the Catholic control. So I'm just helping you understand that as society was growing and the new world at that point in time, we're talking 1500s, right? Columbus had sailed, you know, the ocean blue. We started discovering these new worlds. And so all of these Catholic empire nations started this quest. Now, I want you to understand, colonialism is not just a Western society thing. And as a matter of fact, when you look under the guise of communism, when Russia became the real communist power in the 30s and 40s, before China even got it into their craw that they wanted to subjugate their people as well, Russia was already out basically colonializing or creating colonies of communism throughout Africa and the rest of the world. And as a matter of fact, they actually started, you know, going further and further. And then China comes along and gets involved in the game. And actually China, who was buying because you got to run, just look at it this way. When China became a communist nation, which was decades after the Bolshevik Revolution, they became the number one customer of buying Russian crap. So they were buying SA-2s, they were buying, you know, the Russian, you know, for the Korean War, they were buying Russian jets and so forth until China could start producing their own. And so China was this latecomer, and they were kind of late in the what we would call the modern day industrial movement. But China became the big consumer, and they were buying up this stuff that was helping the economy of Russia. War was becoming the number one economic driver for the world, for both the U.S., for Russia, and China. And so as we moved forward, at that point in time, we were kind of late in the establishment, you can see how colonialism had this revitalization. I'm just pointing this out. The communism became the new world colonialism, and now the colonialism is alive and well in the United States. But I'm going to get back to the Western Christian colonialism that was a branch from the Catholic Church. And so when we come back, we'll get back into how England created its monarchical theocracy and basically duplicated what the Catholic Church was doing, but they did it better because they became the new Emperor of the World, and we'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so, and I know I've covered this. I'm trying to go back and forth from the macro to the micro. So when, again, King John, under the guise of the Catholic Empire, you got to remember at that point in time, British common law was based, actually, the law of Britain was based on civil law, the law of Catholicism. And as they started migrating away and they created their own Bible after the, you know, the attempt for the divorce and severance from the Catholic Church in the 1500s, by the end of the 1500s, early 1600s, the need for having a British Bible and canonizing that Bible. And so we can get into this argument, which Bible is the right Bible? Which Bible was translated properly? I mean, at that point in time, we were actually coming up with these different versions. The Geneva Bible. And so when we look at the differences between all these different Bibles, there were reasons why these Bibles were being created. And so in England, the King James Version was a Bible that then they started moving forward incorporating because, again, it was a monarchical theocracy. The Bible had to be the basis of the law. And so how they interpreted it, because remember, there's always this ambiguity. And there's always, and it's almost, the Bible is perfect for lawyers because any lawyer can take such a document and be able to twist it into any type of perversion that they want to by just isolating and taking things out of context and so forth. Understanding that most people, the more illiterate they become on the foundation of their law, then the easier it is for you to actually pretend and create pretense of new law. And over time, they absolutely, what ends up happening is they realize that they're not following the law. And that's exactly what happened in England, which required the Glorious Revolution, where the people stood up and said, we demand a Bill of Rights which will codify these protections. And so they succeeded in establishing these rights. By the time the colonies were getting to a point of having to pay for Britain's expanse and warring, where the taxes were being placed upon the colonies, this is when the colonies said, hey, hold on here. If you're going to tax us, then we have a right of representation. Now, I'm just going to create a real parallel because when the territories were being established under the Constitution, the reason why the federal government had this insatiable desire to make these states faster and faster, and why they started deploying the, not the militia, but their standing army out into these territories going across the United States. They wanted states to come in because under this, America adopted this concept that you can't be taxed unless you have representation. Remember, that was our mantra. Taxation without representation is unconscionable. So the states were induced, or I should say they were helped along, and the federal government may have had the best intentions, but they did some very tragic errors. This is why you need to read Why Counties Matter Most. I go through the history of how states were placed on a fast track where we, the people, did not institute our governments properly. They just went ahead, that's good enough, that's good enough, that's good enough, you're in the game, now we're taxing you. And they, through that process of that's good enough, that's good enough, the federal government started usurping and taking privilege of saying, well, we can do this to force you in. Now, one of the things that they did have, believe it or not, this constitutional standard, because every state in the union was Christian. And so in mimicking all of the other states in the very beginning of admitting states into the union, one of the things the states had to do was they had to kind of pick a religion that was going to provide for. This is why New Hampshire, or I think it was Vermont, Tennessee, Kentucky, and many of the new states coming in. And this was where they had to eat some crow. Because when Louisiana came in, the Catholic Church was the established church of Louisiana. And they had this responsibility of doing the compassionate services. Now, in America, Catholicism was not considered Christianity. The framers kind of saw, you know, that it was a, you know, it wasn't under common law. It invoked civil law, and they saw these problems. But by that point in time, it was the pill they had to swallow because it was a part of the Louisiana Purchase. They couldn't go down there and wipe everybody out, so they had to figure out how to move along. So bottom line, there was a requirement that each of the colonies had to be Christian. They had to speak English. They had to have the U.S. dollar as their monetary system, and they had to have a recognizable law. Every state in the Union other than Louisiana called and established common law as the law of the land. Now, common law under the umbrella of Britain was based on the Bible because the federal government did not, and I want to dive into this right now, because every state in the Union had their own variation of Anglicanism, Congregationalism, congregational types of churches, the Puritans, the Baptists, and so forth. It was very obvious. It was like that big, you know, red cyst that was about to bust. They didn't want to touch it. They were going to basically avoid it. And the way they did was divine. They allowed each state to have its own self-destiny and basically said, we will never establish a religion. In other words, they created a free market for the worship of Christianity. This is very big because this plays with the scripture of John or Revelations 14:6, because this was the only nation that was absolutely receptive to any type of new Christian faith to be established. In other words, everywhere in the world, if you read Revelations 14:6. This is where the angel, with having the everlasting gospel to be preached on the earth, there was no nation in the world that would allow an angel to establish a new religion to challenge the rest of the religions. This is huge. In other words, America was the nation and still is that nation. We still have religious freedoms to some degree. There's no doubt the United States has its heal on the throats of our religions through taxation and some level of control in the public square. But they still can't come in with guns and shut down your proselyting. They can't come in with guns and shut down your worship. And as a matter of fact, they've kind of proved that they got away with murder with COVID by doing so. So they're getting close because we swallowed it. We allowed this, and they strengthened their heel on our throats. Folks, this is why we cover all of these facts. The reality is this. we have all of the authority under the Constitution to really take back and undo everything that the federal government has done that they have no constitutional authority to do. Because the parties to the compact are the states, not the federal government. The federal government was created by the states, by their ratification and empowering and allowing themselves to be taxed by this little government that was limited and defined and still is limited and defined. We have to stop allowing them to speak in a deep voice and say, you will do what we tell you to. You know, it's almost like we're under this trance, just like the Lord of the Rings and the King of Rohan, where he's under this trance of Wormtongue. And all it took was Gandalf to hit him with his stick, and next thing you know, the trance, he woke up. And this is when he realized the evil that had overtaken him. Folks, I'm hitting you. Everybody is asking you to wake up, and I'm hitting you with the truth. We have everything we need. Only God knew what we would need in these days. He's the only one that knew what we were going to be facing. And that's why I keep on telling you, and that's why I've been doing this political exorcism, that there is really nothing bad about any of the amendments. It is how it has been packaged and sold afterwards to redefine what the 16th and 17th Amendment was. They have no authority to redefine it. The language is clear, and how it was sold was clear. So, this is important. When we look at America under this beautiful system of a free market economics. What is a free market economics? That means that government doesn't tax us on our purchases. Government doesn't tax us on our productions. Government, at least the federal government doesn't. And the federal government doesn't tax us, you know, directly if we get back to them taxing foreign imposts. The reason why they needed to get away from that was to allow United States corporations that were the dominating forces in the world at that point in time, more so, to go overseas to continue to manufacture and bring their crap back here so that they could make more money and start transferring the wealth from America to the world. And in so doing, what they have basically done is they've gotten away with the United States and the people of the United States subsidizing globalism. We've been paying for China as we've continued to allow the free market to operate in America against us. The free market, in other words, bringing crap in without creating imposts. The government prior to the 16th Amendment, it was making its money off of imposts of foreign goods. We were able to cover the federal costs. The reason why they said we need an income tax is because they kept on spending money that was unconstitutional. They said we could spend more and make America better. But the 16th Amendment didn't allow them to spend more. It only allowed them to shift the tax because they need an amendment to spend on anything that is not constitutional. There's no amendment that allows them to spend money on what they want to spend. And so this becomes, and I'm going to point out, the evil of those people in the constitutional, what do they call the Convention of States, the Constitutional Convention Group, the COS Action. These people that are calling for a balanced budget shifts this concept of a limited and defined government to say it doesn't matter what you, the powers you have, as long as you don't spend this much money, it's okay. If you understand the evil of that one amendment, the balanced budget amendment, it opens the door for federal government to spend anything they want on what they want as long as they cap it. The Constitution doesn't allow that currently. So if you want to understand how the Convention of States and how these, what they seem like really good ideas, folks, because we're ignorant or because of the illiteracy on the Constitution, there's good patriots that are thinking these are good solutions when they're actually destructive. We have everything we need based on the Constitution we currently have to get them back, get the genie back into the bottle. I can't tell you how important this is. But we have to start exploiting the Constitution as our weapon and using it against them. This is why First Amendment petitions at your county level to take back your county is paramount. Now, I'll probably get into this later on, but what's really important is we cover the content. So you need to be listening, and on Fridays, and when I do Feedback Friday, I'm going to slowly and methodically kind of walk you through how working at your county level, and we're going to end up going through the First Amendment petitions. Not all of the petitions, but the expectations. If you understand expectations, then you can understand how this literally changes the game. When you finally create a cooperative government that understands their focus is to support and defend that Constitution and ensure government in compliance, when they understand that that's the essence of their oath of office, their legally binding oath that the Constitution demands that they take, then you and they will understand the importance in going up, or actually down the food chain of government, in holding our lower governments. Folks, the government that we institute, we the people institute, is the superior government. That is our government. That is your county. That is your local government. If your county is too big, then your local government would be a fragment of that county, where you create, wherever you have enough people to where you can create a constitution, then as far as I'm concerned, you need to break your county down into smaller counties. Los Angeles County needs to be broken down into smaller counties. And I'm telling you that when we look at New York and some of these other places that are these huge metropolises, you have to get them to break down into what is more manageable. Cut them in half, cut them in quarters. But bottom line, you cannot allow, because subdividing them will actually help open up. Because when you look at the counties, folks, you'll even see big pockets of conservatives. You see big concentrations of communists or people, what we call the useful idiots, because they don't know and because they're that ignorant. When we start opening up these counties and when we go through this process that are the expectations in these petitions, you will start to realize how what ends up happening is a mass education of the people regarding constitutions and delegations of power and the importance of powers of attorney are limited and specified. Powers of attorney are limited and specified constitutions. They're one and the same. One and the same. And as we start getting our arms around this, then we move forward and we actually hold a constitutional convention for our states to take back the power that those dolts, the general government at the state level, gets diminished so that they don't have the power to institute communism or socialism in your state. Now, you're going to find that some counties may want that. But when you get into the constitutional convention of all of the other counties in that state, you will quickly realize that those few counties that call for and they want to empower the central government of the state, they will be the huge minority. And they will be called out for their folly, because we're all getting equally informed. Remember that premise. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. But we also have, there's these things we need to understand, but that's going to come out of these committees of constitutional compliance at your county level. And so as counties move forward, counties will not be able to engage on unconstitutional footings. In other words, if it is not delegated, they can't exercise the power. If it's the Constitution restricts, here's a good one. All of this facial recognition technology and these public camera systems that they're using are direct violations of your constitutional rights. And so these states that are doing this, these counties that are doing this, they're going to be forced to actually dismantle that system because it's a direct violation of your Fourth Amendment right to be secure in your person. The only way they can turn that camera on to actually scan for you is for them to actually have a warrant, very specific and detailed as to what they're looking for and why. That's why the Fourth Amendment, that's why the that's why I tell you that the good Lord gave us everything we need to protect ourselves and to take our government back, to restore our liberties so that we can, who knows? Maybe this is the necessary path we need to go so that angel can finally come and deliver, and so that the world can come and centralize upon that, you know, this concept of liberty by becoming states in the United States. Who knows? Who knows? That angel may have already came. I'm not here to tell you what and when and how the Lord is going to do what he does. I am telling you what the Lord has given us and the charge and responsibility we have as U.S. citizens in supporting that Constitution and no longer allowing public servants to redefine it and tell us what it means and how they're going to control us. The power is in the people at the local levels, at our government. And through a Republican form of government, we do have every opportunity to seize full control and force, all capital letters, force that government at the state level, at the county level, state level, and federal level into compliance. We have everything we need. Now, what I need to do is I need to talk about the very first amendment to the Constitution. And so it's not kind of it's kind of a tall order, and unfortunately I only have a few minutes left. And so when we dive into the Constitution and that very first amendment of the Constitution, then I think it's imperative that, you know, we understand precisely where we need to be going as far as what that Constitution is, right? So in other words, going into the very First Amendment, because this is actually, if you want to have a Constitution that includes all the amendments and those that have missed and so forth, get a color-coded Constitution. But when we look at the actual amendments to the Constitution, there was a First Amendment that was not ratified, or actually, we're told that it was never ratified. I, and the whole point of this, what's left of this show and Monday, we're going to dive into this representation. You've heard me say, and this is in Why Counties Matter Most, that at the end of the Constitutional Convention, and I read this, where George Washington stood up and he says, I don't believe people can be properly represented with 40,000 people. They understood how important representation was in a Republican form of government. And our government has marginalized because they recognize that we can control them when we have a small enough cadre of people being represented. When all of a sudden your representative is representing a million people, then you become, it's just an ocean sound of the people. And those people who have the bigger pots of money actually have the biggest pots of influence. It's because now they have this sea, and this is how they can create this potential of either funneling money or bringing money up out of that 1 million people to buy and control that person so that you have no representation. You don't have any representation now. You may be voting for somebody, but I'm telling you right now, there's not one congressman, in the House or the Senate that is actually representing their people. Because if they were representing the people, then they would be held to the Constitution and supporting it. Why? Because if they're supporting the Constitution, then they are representing you. Because they're protecting your religious freedoms, they're protecting your liberties, they're protecting our southern border, they're protecting us in every capacity, period. But instead, they're playing political theatrics, and they're selling America lock, stock, and barrel to the world globalist, and the conservatives, oh, well, they may obviate, oh, well, that's kind of bad, but they don't tell you the truth. Not one of them. Don't think Rand Paul, Ron Paul, none of these guys have ever told you the truth. None of them, because they never knew the truth. These guys have never read the ratification debates. They actually chase these agendas, and they get you to chase these agendas because we're so easily persuaded. This is what the First Amendment states. After the first enumeration required by the first article of the Constitution, this is the enumeration of representation, there shall be one representative for every 30,000. That's what the Constitution says. Until, though, so this is changing of that Article 1, Section 2. For 30,000, until the number shall be to 100, in other words, when the representatives reach the number of 100 in the House of Representatives, after which the proportion shall be regulated so by Congress that there shall be not less than 100 representatives, nor less than one representative for every 40,000. So in other words, it would shift when they have 100 representatives to actually change that to where we go back to four, instead of 30,000 being represented by one person, it would grow to 40. So in other words, they'd get to 100, and then all of a sudden it would shrink a little bit, and it would change representation, maybe down 10% or whatever, but it would go to 90, and then it would, you know, continue to grow representing 40,000 people, okay? Nor less than one that shall, okay, let me kind of break it back into this. Comma, regulated by Congress, comma, that there shall not be less than 100 representatives, nor less than one representative for every 40,000 persons, until the number of representatives shall amount to 200. So 200 seems to be the next threshold. And the next threshold would then change it from 40,000 to 50,000, because this is what it says, after which the proportion shall be so regulated by Congress that there shall not be less than 200 representatives, nor more than one representative for every 50,000 persons. Now, here's the reason why this is so important. This forced Congress, because, now, let me back up. The reality is, Congress had no authority to, on its own, change the enumeration of representation. In other words, what Madison and the framers did was they proved that when that number changed, it has to be a constitutional amendment. So this very first amendment actually proves the fact that when Congress started playing around with representation in the 1900s with the Reapportionment Act, because that's when they finally got to the fruition that 30,000 people could no longer be represented. This is when, because this actually was a ratified amendment, and that's what we're going to get into. This actually proves that they couldn't play this game. But instead of actually allowing this to be recognized as a ratified amendment, it gave them the power to start manipulating how much and how they would want us to be represented, which means that they have let out, or actually they have taken a level of control over our representation to a point where instead of changing things, so we're going to dive into this on Monday before I get into the augmenting of the ratification debates. This is that important. I want you to understand that taking back representation properly, so we're properly represented, is the path forward. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.